Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
But I like on Mondays, especially on a Victory Monday, that we make room for you, and as we do every single day on this show. Phone number is 332-3776. And then we sort of settle in, and then we get the expert's opinion on from Dan Weider in the Chicago Tribune, who you hear on all three shows. And he could kind of, you know, oh, were we being too critical of the Bears? On a Monday, are we too excited over 2-0?
Are we just right?
Yeah, or where are we as far as all this is
concerned?
How's
your porridge? How's your NFL porridge? It's okay. Just right.
And Dan joins us right now in the Corona Hotline. Hi, Dan.
I'm on Victory Avenue Boulevard
right now. Yeah, Victory Avenue Boulevard.
Have you heard the song?
I think I've heard parts of it. I need to get the full rendition, though.
I know. Yeah. We'll play it some other time.
Yeah, we're not going to play it for you now.
No.
But it's been weird. We've gotten like these parody songs that haven't been that good, but they've been funny the first 2 weeks. Bears fans are just happy to see football and wins.
Yeah, those are two very nice things, right? Football and wins. We'll sign up for that all day long. I think it's very important to realize that the thank you notes from Hellas Hall to the NFL schedule makers should be in the mail today. Hopefully the Postal Service does its job and gets them to the schedule makers on time, because the Bears have gotten this luxury of playing these two opponents out of the gates that have allowed them to play mediocre football and yet waltz into week three without a hole to dig out of, right? To be 2-0 and be able to make your corrections without having to play catch up is a really, really nice thing. And now they've got to figure out what they can correct and what which of their flaws are just their flaws that they're going to have to live with for the remainder of the 2020 season.
So what are you expecting them to do this weekend? I mean, we got plenty of time, but like, how will they match up with a Falcons team that gives up a ton but also scores a ton? How is this matchup, do you think, set up for this Bears team?
So I haven't dug deep enough into the specifics of the matchup yet to give you a really informed answer. What I will say is this, that this Falcons team, as you know, is capable of challenging your defense in ways that may put pressure on your offense to be in a pinball game, right? To try to keep up, to try to play in a chase game. And personally, that's what I'm rooting for. I want to see if Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky and the rest of this offense are capable of keeping up in a track meet, right? Or do they just get left behind and we're left to see that if the defense can't carry the load that this team is doomed, right? So that's kind of what I'm hopeful for, to see a high scoring game to figure out if the Bears have what it's have enough to keep up and if they're made in a way that allows them to score points in a game that is equipped to score points, right? I think Sunday afternoon was just so disappointing in the way the final 30 minutes went that I think most of Chicago felt like two very contrasting emotions between 1:30 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. At 1:30, you're saying, boy, we are dominating a lesser opponent and clearly showing signs that we're on the ascent. And then by 3:30, you're like, yeah, this might be the same old 8-8, 9-7 Bears team that we thought they were.
So do you think, and I posted that on Sunday, that, hey, Atlanta's giving up 39 a game. Can the Bears, if needed, it's not, I know it's a will, maybe they won't have to, maybe the defense comes up big, but can the Bears, if necessary, go in there, put up 35, 37, a big number in that building?
We haven't seen it at any point in the last, 3 years to say yes, right? Like, we just haven't seen it. So I have no idea, and that's why I kind of want it to become one of those games to test whether they've actually made strides offensively and can be one of these offenses that can, get you 21 points in a half on a regular basis. They got the 21 in the fourth quarter in Detroit, but that's the exception more than the rule for this team. And so we'll see. You know, I think there were a lot of things to be encouraged about with Trubisky on Sunday. And then when I got to the end of my rewatch on Monday evening, I was thinking, what did I see that I hadn't seen before, right? There wasn't anything either on the positive side of the ledger or the negative side of the ledger that I didn't already know. And so, you know, this is one of those games that I think gives you a different brand of a game to test him and see where his development really is.
It, has the offensive line been the one constant that you would give thumbs up to in the first 2 weeks of the season on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, so that's when I got to the end and started asking myself, what out of this entire football team haven't we seen before that we've seen through these first 2 weeks? The commitment and the forcefulness of the running game was what I concluded was the most pleasant surprise. That this team is running the ball really well. The offensive line is blocking it really well. Montgomery, particularly late in the game the other day, coming back after that scary neck injury, really looked like a back who could close games for you, right? That's what you want when you have a lead in the fourth quarter, to be able to rely on a guy to get 11 and then 10 and then 23. And then, you know, hopefully that 9 doesn't get called back because of a chop block on your guard. And so I would say that the O-line and the running game has been a pleasant surprise that leads you to believe that the offense is trending in the right direction. Now you just have to figure out a way to not get shut out in the second half against an opponent that's not really good and be able to put that game away about 45 to 50 minutes earlier than you did.
Dan Weider joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. As you mentioned, there were some other things that you've seen, like with Mitch, that, hey, he's capable of having great quarters. He's capable of having bad quarters. And the Giants game was exactly that. With that said, through two games, do you believe his leash is the same, or do you think the leash has grown longer?
No, I think it's the same. I think there were enough mistakes in the second half of that game that reminded Matt Nagy of everything he lived through in 2019. You guys got to remember that if the Giants complete a pass on the last play of the game there, this entire week is devoted to talking about how the Bears blew a 17-point lead at home to an opponent without Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard, and the city would be on fire, right? And that fire and those smoke fumes would find their way to Matt Nagy's office at Hallis Hall, and he'd be very aware of parts of the reasons of why that happened. I will say this for Mitch. He went into last week's game with an emphasis on being more efficient and productive on third down. They go down the field on the opening drive. They're 4-for-4 on third down. His touchdown passes on third down. His later touchdown pass to Darnell Mooney at the end of the first half is on third down. He was 6-for-8 in the first half on third down. Mitch made plays that you say, okay, let's get this on a more regular basis. Some of the improvisation, there was a scramble for 12 yards in the fourth quarter on a screenplay that the Giants just absolutely blew up at the snap. And rather than making a messy situation worse, Mitch recognized it, used one of his gifts, which are those legs, took off, got around the corner, got 12 yards and a first down. And those are the things that we saw more frequently in 2018 that really, really, really frustrated opposing defenses, where you do everything right and you make a play and you sniff it out and you're there in position. And then Mitch takes off, moves the chains, and you're thinking, man, we can't get a break here. And so to see some of that, it was very encouraging. I didn't hear all your show yesterday, so I don't know what the final verdict was on the
Shame
second
on
interception.
You.
But I think that play is important to continue discussing, because it's about where you want to set your bar for this quarterback and what you deem acceptable. If you think that's an acceptable throw to be picked off and that Allen Robinson should make that play or at least keep James Bradbury from making it, that's fine. But then you're setting your bar for a 9-7, potentially 10-6 wild card team. And if you want to be more than that, then your quarterback's got to be better with his footwork. He's got to be better with his release. He's got to be better with where he puts that ball. And so that's up to you guys to decide where you want to set the bar for Mitch.
It's interesting because I agree with a lot of what you say. I mean, you start the game, you see some things, and you're like, well, I've seen that before. I know he can make that throw in a one-read situation. When he gets out on the edge, he can be dynamic. Then he makes those mistakes over there. I've seen that before. I would say, from my own perspective, now that I've had a couple of weeks to digest what I've seen, while it's still uneven and consistently inconsistent, Dan, I would say that it is an improvement over what we saw last year so far. Would
no
you agree?
Question. Yeah, absolutely. But we have to remember that what we saw last year was bottom tier, rotten egg smelling, you know, terrible football on a consistent basis. And so if we're celebrating, you know, steps up from that, then, you know, I don't know. I'm going to give you a play to go back and watch if you get a chance. We all know the 4th-and-2 completion to Bobby Massey, which was that big break. The play before that, Dalvin Tomlinson knocks down a pass at the line of scrimmage. And the Bears and Mitch Trubisky are so incredibly fortunate that that pass was knocked down, because Kyler Fackrell was dropping into coverage. Trubisky was staring down Allen Robinson the entire play. And as he throws the ball, Fackrell is cutting off that route, and he's going to intercept the ball. And it looks like he's got room. It might be a result-changing interception. It might be a pick six. It might be something that changes the entire discussion of this week. Instead, Tomlinson gets his hand on the ball, knocks the pass down, and saves Mitch from himself. And those are the types of things that when you're in the film room at Hallis Hall and you're going through them, you go, oh boy,
right.
You know, here we are in a closeout situation in the fourth quarter, and our quarterback almost did it reminded me of the Cutler interception to Kyle Williams in that season opener in 2014, where you just say, whatever you do, don't throw an interception right over the middle, you know, throwing back across the field, across your body. And it could have been a disaster. They got away with one, and through 2 weeks, they've gotten away with two, right? And they've survived, and they've escaped, and they're 2-0, and you can use that to your advantage to carry that momentum forward.
Where are you on the Cam Newton debate? Because I was in on Cam Newton all offseason, so this is in hindsight, at least for me personally. But again, this was a quarterback who had won an MVP, who had lots of injury questions in a COVID year, and who signed for a very low price, and the Bears needed a quarterback. Through two games, and I know it's only two, but when you play national TV and you showcase yourself like he did, Dan, where does that work for you and your brain when it comes to Ryan Pace and Cam Newton?
Yeah, I've changed my mind a little bit on it after seeing the first 2 weeks. I had talked to some folks that were close to the Panthers organization back in the spring, and they said, listen, before you make this dice roll, you got to consider three things. You got to consider fit for your offense. You got to consider the state of his shoulder. It wasn't so much his foot. It was his shoulder after surgery a couple of years ago, and the way that he was throwing the deep ball just hadn't looked the same for a year and a half. And then they said, you have to be ready to understand just sort of the eccentric and, sort of ego that Cam brings with him, and whether you want to kind of put up with that through the highs and the lows, and what that's going to be like. And so if you were comfortable with checking all three of those boxes, then roll the dice, get him at a bargain price, and see where it takes you. At the time, I thought the Bears, with their dedication to giving Mitch one more chance to salvage himself, owed it to themselves to bring in a guy that better fit their system, that could be in a competition and could, approach the dynamic that way. In retrospect, you say, boy, to have a guy playing at that level for that price with this defense, it's pretty intriguing. And like I said, I've kind of changed my tune, particularly after watching Sunday night with some of the lasers he was throwing and the way he was running the football as well.
I think the majority of the teams that were quarterback needy, I have to believe that the biggest issue was they didn't know if he was healthy or not. I mean, we were told as well that the shoulder bothered him so bad at times that he wouldn't even throw till Fridays during the week for at least 1 year, that he was just so banged up that no one could tell whether or not he was going to be able to be 100% healthy.
But wasn't the price low enough where you could just, you would take that risk, because what is it really costing you if he's not?
Well, it was going to be less than $21 million for sure, but it was going to be more than the $1 million that the Patriots signed him for.
Right, like you give him Tariq Cohen's money.
Yeah.
Give him Jimmy Graham's money. And Dan, can you hang on? I got so many more questions for you. Is there a way you can hang on?
I can talk to you all day.
Okay, good.
All right.
I want to continue this discussion. I have questions about Anthony Miller. I have questions about Cole Kmet and his role in this offense at this point. I know Waddle's wants to pick your brain some more. If you have a question for Dan Weider, 312-332-3776. He's really good, and we'll talk to him more next.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
conversation continues with Dan Weider from the Tribune. A lot of questions still to be asked. And Dan, we were talking about money. We were talking about Cam Newton. And some people question the optics of paying Tariq Cohen first over Robinson. My bigger issue was paying a backup running back who's getting like 100 touches a year over $5 million a year. What did you make of Tariq Cohen's contract?
Yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher, honestly, because you're talking about a guy, he had 15 offensive touches through the first 2 weeks of this season. He was really, really good 2 years ago. He's an all-pro punt returner. He had more than 1,100 yards from scrimmage. He was one of those chess pieces that Matt Nagy was utilizing on a week-in, week-out basis to create matchups and be a big part of the offense. And in the 18 games since, it's been pretty pedestrian. And he's a really good punt returner, but he also doesn't return a lot of punts, right, with the way today's game is and the way things go. And so, I'm all for rewarding the guys you've drafted and developed and all that, but there is a bit of a head-scratcher here, particularly as it relates to the ongoing negotiations with Robinson, because if you're Robinson, you're saying, look at all these other people that you've found a way to pay probably beyond their market value, right? Whether it's a Cohen, whether it's a Graham, whether it's a Danny Trevathan now, who obviously gets extended in the spring and now is on the field half the time and looks good only half the time of the half the time that he's out there, right? And so, it's a bit of a head-scratcher with Cohen, and eventually you've got to figure out a way to get this Robinson thing done. Otherwise, you risk losing him in ways psychologically that you don't want to risk.
All right, on that note, I have an odd thought, okay?
Give it to me.
I thought that the last couple of days, the criticism of Robinson was unusually, not hard, but it was more harsh than it has been in the past. But I personally believe that after watching the sideline ball that was intercepted, ultimately, I'm not going to be too hard on Mitch. You're right. It was a little bit underthrown. Allen Robinson, maybe 7 out of 10 times can come down with that ball. But if you watch that play closely, Bradberry, who was a very good cornerback, had his arm in between Allen's like rib cage and reached up in there and actually played the ball with his back to the, which is odd, but played the ball with his left arm and made a brilliant interception. You could almost argue that it was a fumble recovery. Anyway, Allen was not going to, he could have stopped it from being an interception, but it wasn't going to be a catch because his left foot was in, his right foot was out. Okay, so I've watched this play 1,000 times. My point is that I thought that there was like unusually, and again, Matt's not like overly critical of a lot of people. Maybe this was a little clapback at Allen after last week, you know, and his contract negotiation came a little bit personal and a little bit more vocal, that maybe there was a little extra edge to hey, Rob didn't play as well this week as he normally does. Am I crazy?
Well, I don't know that you're crazy. I just don't know that I would go there because I think that Robinson is their best offensive player, and I don't think
so
the runner-up is.
You just gave him a backup running back, a $5 to $6 million a year contract.
I'm 100% with you on this. You have no disagreement on me with that because this guy is more valuable to your offense than anybody else in your offense, and the runner-up isn't even close, right? And I think we've seen that, you know, over the last year and a half for certain. Robinson only had 3 catches for 33 yards on Sunday, and so that's subpar by his standards. He was targeted 9 times. We mentioned one that got knocked down and should have been picked off. We mentioned the interception there. He's going to have better weeks than he had last week. I don't think there's any sort of internal needling going on because I think the respect level is just too high for who the guy is. The big thing that needs to happen, though, is he needs to go out and have a really good game Sunday in Atlanta so that we can put aside any sort of speculation or notion that this contract stuff is so far hanging over his head that it's affecting his production, right?
Well, I'm just saying real quick, Dan, I'm just saying, like, he wants to be paid X. Obviously, they don't want to pay him X. So why not draw his attention to why we don't want to pay you X a little bit every now and again? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but here's the deal. You know, I was getting stuff from various angles the other day about both of Mitch's interceptions are on Allen Robinson. And I said, you want to play that game. If you want to put out the ledgers of the number of times that Allen Robinson has cost Mitch production versus the opposite.
Right.
You know, right. I don't think that the Trubisky folks want to get in that ring and play that game, because it would be about, you know, 85-7 or something on the score sheet by the time you're through with that.
Yeah.
Dan, Cole Kmet has two targets in two games total. One in each game, one catch. I know he's a rookie. I know he didn't have a preseason game and OTAs, so it's different. But are you surprised that they're not looking to him more? He's not more involved?
Not yet. He's a rookie. He didn't have OTAs or a full training camp. I think that is all part of this, that you know, this is a kid that is still adjusting to the speed of Sunday NFL football, and that takes a little while. The other part about this, and you guys can offer your feedback on this, I've had issues over the last year plus with the number of different personnel groupings that Nagy likes to utilize. I know he's got this deep playbook, and he likes to get to this and likes to get to that and likes to get to this other thing. But a lot of times there's just so much in and out between their personnel that you never feel like you get this rhythm where you have this bread and butter of an offense where you know that, you know, playmaker X is going to be in for this series, and he's going to be in there for most of the series, and we're going to be able to do a bunch of different things. They're constantly rotating receivers in and out. They're constantly rotating tight ends in and out. They're constantly rotating backs in and out. And you never seem to get that flow within the offense, because none of the players are in that game rhythm, right? And so that's one of the criticisms I've had with Matt really since the start of 19. And we'll see what they can do with that, because it does affect each one of these guys. And I know you wanted to ask about Miller, and we can get to that in a minute, but when you're only on the field for a certain amount of plays, it intensifies the pressure to make those plays count. And when you don't, sometimes that can snowball in the other direction for you in ways that you didn't intend.
All right, so really quick on Miller then. A, do we need to see more consistency? And then the second part of the wide receiver core is Teddy Ginn was inactive. A listener wanted to know, is there a trade market at all out there? Maybe back to New Orleans, who has some wide receiver issues because of injury right now.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get a lot of people knocking down the door for Ted Ginn at this stage. I think the healthy scratch of Ted Ginn was a byproduct of just how quickly Darnell Mooney has earned their trust. Mooney's here to provide that speed element to the offense, and if you can count on him to be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there, to make catches when the ball's thrown his way and to do things on offense when the ball's not coming his way, then you can develop him in year one rather than spending your time trying to squeeze the
last him a lot.
Toothpaste out. Yeah, and then you don't have to waste your time trying to squeeze the last bit of toothpaste out of the tube from, you know, 14th year Ted Ginn. And so that is more a vote of confidence in Mooney. To your first question, yes, Anthony Miller needs to be more consistent, and I'm worried about a performance like Sunday's, because Matt sort of leaves the doghouse door open for Anthony on a regular basis, and when you drop a touchdown pass and don't run the right depth on another route and you have a zero catch game, you might find yourself there. And I'm very worried that for a guy that Bears really need to be that number two receiving threat to Robinson, that we might be entering a stretch where he's unproductive for another three or four games in a row. And that's bad news for this offense. And that's why I think Sunday's game in Atlanta is a big game for him just as much as it is for Mitch.
Really good stuff, Dan.
Thanks,
appreciate your time. Thank you.
Great talking to you, fellas. We'll talk soon.
There you go. We had a lot to catch up with him on, Bob. I mean, there's still a lot of questions, as we all have questions about the Bears. We'll have some fun inside Waddle's world, and we have not tackled the Cubs issues, and we'll do that later in the show, including really good stuff on this radio station today from Anthony Rizzo.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. On Twitter, this is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you're here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
Yeah, Waddle's World brought to you by our great friends at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit Wintrust.com/finest, member FDIC. I liked your question about Cole Kmet. and his lack of usage.
Yeah.
The one thing I was going to add before I forget, and know we were running out of time, was that on the other side of the football, Jalen Johnson has really shown up in two games as a rookie. It's like yesterday you said, say something really nice about this team. And I went to Darnell Mooney, and I really I like his routes. I like his body control. I like his speed. I like the fact that he catches the ball with his hands. I also like what I've seen from Jalen Johnson a whole bunch. A whole bunch. A big bunch.
Yeah, you're asking a lot of a corner in the NFL in today's league to step in with no preseason right away.
Well, and you're on the other side of a guy that's a pretty accomplished corner in Fuller. So you're going to get the attention of most teams.
Right.
So I've been very impressed. Like I said, after week one, he looks like he belongs. I think that he's had as many, like there's only one other player in the league through 2 weeks that has as many or more pass breakups, right? So like even statistically, beyond what the eye test is telling you statistically, he's had an impact. So good job. Good
Great job. Yes. Yeah. And it's good to see draft picks contribute right away. A fifth rounder and a second rounder right away. If you get Cole Kmet involved a little bit more.
Amen.
You know, Montgomery's finally starting. Like, I don't blame Montgomery. I blame the way the Bears used him last year. And you see he's the type of runner that gets better as the game gets on. He needs to get going a little bit.
I'm with you. Did you see three NFL head coaches were fined $100,000 each for not wearing their masks, according to Shefty?
Vic was one of them.
Vic Fangio, Pete Carroll, and Kyle Shanahan were docked $100,000 each for not wearing masks this past Sunday, according to Shefty. In addition, the league fined each of the coaches' teams an additional $250,000. NFL sent a memo last week to reinforce its requirement that coaches wear face coverings at all times on the sidelines during games, threatening discipline for those who don't comply. My guess is that total will go up fairly significantly because last night John Gruden didn't know what a mask was, and I don't believe Sean Payton had one anywhere near him.
Gruden.
He put one on at the end when the game had been salted away.
It was on his chin. Yeah. It's on his head.
She'll go back
everywhere.
Go back and look at a video of Belichick over the course of the game on Sunday night where his mask was. I swear to you, it looked like a handlebar mustache at one time. It looked like a mustache. Maybe not a handlebar mustache, but like a Tom Selleck mustache is what that thing looked like.
Yeah. But, craziness.
Drew Brees says the Saints aren't in sync. Totally out of sync is what he said. What did you think of them last night?
Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, a lot of people say it's the overreaction about saying that Drew Brees is done. I heard Aaron Rodgers rant about that on McAfee's show today. Do you believe watching Drew Brees, now he was without Michael Thomas.
That's a huge loss.
Huge loss. But do you look at that and do you say, boy, there were a lot of things that weren't characteristic of Drew Brees?
What I say is that Father Time has never lost a fight, okay? I mean, at some point, Father Time is going to get you. Drew Brees is 41. I think you can actually argue that there were a few signs last year, at least late in the season, where maybe Drew isn't, like, he's still competent. Would I take him on art? Yes, I would. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that you see that there is some skill that has eroded. I think it's natural. Don't you, when you watch him? Like last year, weren't there moments when you said Drew Brees didn't look like the Drew Brees from several years ago?
Sure.
And at the end of the year, he still had 116 quarterback rating and a 74 completion percentage. But, like, the bar is set so damn high for him. Like, I even said on our little text chain last night, I think Tom Brady had some senior moments in the first couple of weeks. More in week one than week two, but there's some moments for a 43-year-old quarterback where you go, I've seen Tom be better.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhat natural.
I had one more question, too, about the Monday night game, guys. Where is the noise coming from in the NFL games when there's not
inside
a crowd?
The house.
Is it? Whoa. Is it coming from Vegas, or was that through ESPN?
No, so some of the stadiums are piping in crowd noise.
Right.
Some of the stadiums are using their own crowd noise because they have crowds.
Like the Bears did there, that, right? With the air raid siren.
Yeah, you
but there's
still
there's a limit to the decibels, right?
Yes,
like
yes.
There's like a 80 decibels or whatever it is.
But also, when I believe it was Wiederer who last week, when he was talking about the
Detroit
game, he said that he went and rewatched the broadcast from Fox and said that it was much louder on TV than it seemed in the stadium.
Because if you heard Al Michaels, I think maybe it was Michelle Tafoya on Sunday, say something about how silent it is inside Seattle's building.
Right.
But if you watched it on the game, they piped in that noise so loud. So my question is, what are the players hearing, if anything? And is this just for us on TV to make us, for some reason, feel more comfortable?
I got another question. I asked it earlier, and then one of our really good friends just texted us both, Sylvie, and said that he says here that, FYI, in his postgame presser, Gruden admitted he had COVID in July. Did you know that? I did not know that.
So what, is he exempt then from that?
That's what I'm asking.
That was your question.
I know that Sean Payton discussed it. I believe his fiance or his girlfriend, who is a nurse, I believe. She's a healthcare professional. I think they both had it. I know Sean Payton had it.
I read that last night, too, that he seemed annoyed that people thought it was a prank that he pulled. Remember when he talked to the team and they told the team and that got out? Do you guys remember that back
when Sean Payton?
Oh, yeah, No. Remember with Gruden.
Oh, yeah,
and
people
were
joking
and
saying, like...
But it was a prank, I thought.
Well, apparently he had COVID, so... So he seemed annoyed that the media was making it seem like he was pranking his team.
If anyone would make up that he's had COVID and continue the lie going, it's Gruden.
Oh, so you're saying that he's now doubling down?
Yes, yes. Like, oh, yeah, you thought it was a prank. Well, I had it, and I'm not wearing my mask because I had it, and I'm immune.
Take that.
Yeah.
Hashtag take that.
Spider-Y banana. Hey. What's the play?
It sounds about right.
You got to stick with the lie. Stick with the lie. Stick with the lie.
Okay, let's stick with the lie then.
Stick with the lie.
Speaking of COVID, seven Notre Dame players have tested positive in their game against Wake Forest this weekend has been postponed. ACC is working on rescheduling the game, and Wake Forest AD John Curry has identified October 3rd as a shared open date for both schools.
And this, I have a question for you guys about football in the state of Illinois later, and then if this changes your mind about some things.
Broncos have signed quarterback Blake Bortles.
Desperate times call for desperate measures, right?
Blake Bortles is back.
Is that going to be Mitch in 2 years, too?
I don't know. I hope not. What are you looking at me like that for, Abdallah? I don't know.
You want to continue this ride?
I want him to get better. I know that, like, I get it. Like,
when the Bears are done with him, he will get a second chance as a backup.
Yeah.
But then he could be Blake Bortles where he just jumps.
So he's getting a new contract.
I don't think so. No,
I think so.
That's the thing. Like, the Bears now painted themselves into this corner where is Ryan Pace going to pay him for an average year?
Wait a second, time out. You can sign Cam as a free agent at the end of the year.
You can, but then you don't know if it would work in your offense, and now you're buying high. Probably.
So what if you buy high? If you get the right decision, you buy it higher than $1 million.
That's my favorite, is saying something about Cam and then the response of he'd be horrible here.
Well, look, wouldn't Matt Nagy, someone brought up the valid point, wouldn't Matt Nagy take Cam Newton and say, we're redoing our offense for you, like the Patriots did?
Yeah, the Patriots did not put him in their offense and that. They've tailored, which a good coach will do.
But if you're running,
isn't Nagy supposed to be doing some RPO stuff?
Yes. If you're making design runs, isn't that what they're doing? Isn't that what the Patriots are doing?
Cam Newton for that, right?
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm team Cam Newton.
Yeah, I don't think that he would struggle in this offense. I think it would be different. I'm a believer that the offense that they're running for Mitch is entirely different. That if Nick Foles steps in for Mitch, that Nick Foles will run almost exclusively out of shotgun, because that's what Nick Foles does.
You imagine Nick Foles in an RPO.
Nick Foles does run the RPO.
Yeah, I know, with the Eagles, he did it well.
I know, but he's a statue now. He's not running now.
No, but he would still know when to run, stick it in the belly of the running back or pass it.
I'm telling you, part of it too. I'm telling you, if Nick Foles plays this year, the offense will look entirely different than what it looks like now.
Sure. Right.
But that goes to your question about Nagy being able to adapt his offense to Cam Newton. He's changed his offense for Mitch this year. Mitch was never under center as much as he's been the first two games.
Look, as much as I've been Team Cam and I've wanted him here, I always told you that I wouldn't guarantee that he would be great. I knew that it was risky. The thing that I was shocked about watching the Seattle game, I was shocked how accurate he was.
Well, because he's healthy.
Even in the MVP year, Waddle, he's always been like a 58% passer or someone like that. He's been 70% this year, and he was throwing it downfield, and I was betting Seattle, so I was pissed that he was so accurate, but I was shocked how accurate he was.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I mean, I think in the Miami game, you didn't see as much pushing the ball down the field as you did against Seattle, but through two games, listen, you can argue that offense in New England looks better with Cam Newton than it did last year with Tom Brady. The offense last year in New England with Tom Brady was awful.
That's the big hot take today.
It's true.
Are the Patriots better with Cam Newton?
I don't think that's a hot take. I think that's a measured take.
Yeah, this is a tiny sample size. It's two games. Now, can that change between now and the end of the season? Listen, Cam Newton still doesn't have a ton of receivers the way Tom Brady didn't. But Tom Brady couldn't tuck and run and give you a different threat the way that Cam Newton can.
Cam has four touchdowns now? I think it's four.
I don't know. I'd have to look at his stuff.
I'll look it up for you while you...
He's got rushing touchdowns. He has four, yes. Four rushing touchdowns.
Four touchdowns already.
Well, I'm just saying, the offense is entirely different with Cam than it was with Tom Brady. And again, I think you can argue that the offense through two games looks better than it did last year pretty much at any time with Tom. But they changed everything.
Yes.
All right, I got some nonsense for you, including the nuttiest story of the day when we come back. This hour brought to you by White Claw Hard Seltzer, crafted using seltzer water, 5% alcohol, and a hint of natural fruit. Available in 8 all-natural fruit flavors. It's low-carb, gluten-free, and only 100 calories. White Claw Hard Seltzer, made pure. Please drink responsibly.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
You know what time of day it is? Nuttiest story of the day time. It's brought to you by Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, A Night with Screwball.
And it's bound to get a little nutty.
Damn right. I was told by Adam Abdallah that I wasn't allowed to read the story for myself until I read it out loud here.
Oh, authentic reaction.
Because yeah. I think there's going to be a perception about what you're reading is. Just read it.
Okay. I don't know what's going to happen. I see the headline.
Yeah.
And it entertains me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a child.
Share it with us already.
I'm a child, but...
No, stretch it out a little more.
Poop knives win 2020 LG Nobels. What is this?
Nobels? I think it's Ig Nobels.
Ig Nobels? I don't know. That was an L or a Nobels. I don't know what it is.
Maybe we should have read this first.
Maybe they're fake Nobel. Basically, they're like weird science Nobel prizes.
They're spoof prizes for dubious but humorous scientific achievements. Should have been renamed the Ig Nobels. An anthropologist who tested an urban legend by fashioning a knife out of frozen human feces, and a man who found that spiders oddly give scientists who study insects the heebie-jeebies, are among the 2020 winners.
So when you read poop knives win award, I would have assumed...
I was thinking about somebody who keeps a knife in the bathroom
to cut things up
to make sure that they dispose of
and
properly.
Finally, the
which
originator...
is quite frankly one of the grossest stories of all time.
Yeah. We have a poop knife sequel.
Yes.
Well, no, because this story is now about a scientist.
A knife made out of poop.
That's the sequel. That's not the same as the first.
That found a story about cavemen back in the day making knives out of their frozen poop.
Yeah.
And using it.
That's fantastic.
And trying to cut meat with it.
That's how we got here. Urban legend.
Yes.
Yeah, so
2020 is the year of a poop knife.
Yeah.
Like, if there was a year that would represent a knife made out of poop, it would be this year.
All right. Well, anyway, this professor, an assistant professor of anthropology at Kent State and co-director of the university's experimental archaeology lab, used a real human feces frozen to minus 50 degrees centigrade and filed to a sharp edge. Then he tried to cut meat with it.
Oh, boy.
The poop knives failed miserably, he said. There's not a lot of basis empirically for this fantastic story. This study is a little gross, but makes an important point. There are a lot of narratives out there based on phony, or unproven science.
Okay, so this could be a whole fallacy.
Well, no, what it was an urban legend, basically. There was a story fascinated since high school by the story of an Inuit man in Canada who made a knife out of his own excrement. The story has been told and retold, but is it true? So he went through the experiment to see whether or not it was actually something that could happen.
He's like Mythbusters.
Yes, he's a Mythbuster with a poop knife. He said, no sale on the poop knife.
He took he
let's get to the bottom of this.
And finally, real quick, I just want to give you a headline and you go to the Google machine. Not all rats like to be tickled, scientists discover.
Tickle those rats.
We've talked about waste of money before.
Right.
You know, why?
Right, you're right.
Are rats ticklish?
Amen.
The man just made a poop knife. Like, don't get all hot and bothered about a rat being tickled when a man made a knife out of poop.
Abdallah's right. I'm sticking with Abdallah.
No, that's easy. You take a poop, you freeze it, you fashion it to a knife, you try to cut some meat. That's like one day. You got to get a bunch of rats together. You got to try tickling them.
Why do you care if a rat is ticklish?
What is the scientific theory you're trying to prove with tickling rats?
I didn't read this story either, Chris. I really didn't. I was just giving you the headline. Yeah.
Is Greeny joining us next?
Yes.
So Greeny is pulling something that our old baseball reporter used to try with us.
He's pulling a Jesse Rogers.
Where the old baseball reporter would text us and say, guys, I've got something good for you guys.
Three, two, one.
Greeny did that, and he's going to join us in 2 minutes. What does he have for us? Find out in 2 short minutes.